Welcome to the East County Magazine Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our brand new offices and studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. A federal judge has ruled that California's death penalty enforcement has become so arbitrary and lengthy that it amounts to a violation of the constitutional prohibition against cruel and unusual punishment. The ruling may be appealed to the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and California Attorney General Kamala Harris says she's currently reviewing the ruling. Since 1978, only 13 out of 900 people assigned to death row in California have actually been executed, and none since 2006. Another 94 died of natural causes on death row. Death row inmates are placed in solitary confinement for up to 23 hours a day, and some have languished there for decades. U.S. District Court Cormac Carney, appointed by President George W. Bush, said that arbitrary factors rather than legitimate ones, like the nature of the crime or date of the death sentence, determine whether an individual will actually be executed. With the death penalty imposed so rarely and so arbitrarily, executions serve no retribution or deterrent purpose, the judge wrote. The ruling came in the case of a petition filed by death row inmate Ernest Dwayne Jones, who was sentenced almost 20 years ago to die for raping and murdering his girlfriend's mother. He had previously been paroled for an earlier rape of a former girlfriend's mother. Executions in the state were halted in 2006 due to a moratorium. And then in 2010, state officials tried to execute a convicted murderer and rapist of a teen girl. But state and federal courts blocked the action over concerns over whether lethal injections were humane punishments. The court's recent decision has drawn mixed reactions. Victims and their families need and deserve justice. This ruling denies them and society justice, said Republican State Senator Jim Nielsen, who's the former chairman of the California Board of Prison Terms, the New York Times reports. Senator Nielsen adds, the current system needs improvement, but to completely get rid of the death penalty is unconscionable for victims and their families and society. But Matt Cherry, who is the executive director of Death Penalty Focus, told CNN that it's time to replace California's broken death penalty system with life in prison without the possibility of parole. He concludes, that's the best way to ensure that convicted killers remain behind bars until they die, without wasting tens of millions of tax dollars every year on needless appeals. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The tallest dam raising in the United States is now complete. On Wednesday, the San Diego County Water Authority held a dedication ceremony for the new dam at San Vicente Reservoir Lakeside. The new dam is 337 feet high, an increase of 117 feet over its original height. The project took 3 years and cost $416 million to complete. The added water in the reservoir will be able to supply 300,000 homes each year and provide San Diego County with extra water in case of emergency. But not just yet. It will take an estimated 2 to 5 years for the reservoir to refill to its new level, depending on rainfall and availability of imported water, as well as how much water area residents consume. The lake remains closed to recreational use until the water level rises to the level of the newly installed boat ramp. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, and today we are riding the rails in Campo at the Southwest Railway Museum in honor of the grand opening of the long-awaited Southwest Railway Library.
So this is Leon Thompson. I'm riding the train, and this is an antique train.
You know, the railroad has always had a reputation for having great food, fine, comfortable accommodations. You can stretch your legs, you can get up and walk around. Yeah. You can enjoy the scenery.
Fresh air, talk to people.
Yeah, yeah. Can't do that on an airplane.
Now we're here with Bruce Simmelsberger, who is the archivist for the Southwest Railway Library. Bruce, it's a very historic day here. They just had the ribbon cutting, the grand opening. Tell us a little bit about the history and the significance of this library.
This library was originally put together in the early 1960s when the family trust of a fellow named Dick Dodge, a well-known rail author in the San Diego area and a longtime researcher, left all of his archives to the Southwest Railway Library as a separate organization. In the 1970s, it became part of the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum Association, which is where it is presently. The library at that time had a lot of materials rail-related to early San Diego rail history that were not available anywhere else, including all of Dick Dodge's research notebooks. During the 1980s, when I joined the museum, the library was in a medical building in La Mesa, mostly stored in boxes. I wanted to do research. They told me, join the museum and help us catalog, and maybe in a year or two, the collection will be available and you can start doing research. That was in 1985. After that point, unfortunately, we lost the lease in that building. We tried to get space in the Naval Hospital in Balboa Park when they were building the new one. They had an old library building. City policies put that one on hold permanently, as it turned out. The library moved into a succession of temporary quarters during the 80s. And finally, in the 1990s, we were able to spend most of a decade in the baggage building at the Amtrak station downtown San Diego. And at that point, the library really got organized. We got a donation of the steel shelving from the old Navy Library, and we were able to get almost everything on the shelf. We started cataloging. This is great.
Fantastic. So tell us what people can see if they come here. It's open by appointment only?
It's open by appointment only. It is a research archive, so it's not a lending library.
Yeah. Everything from the San Diego Railway history, and I understand there's more. Tell us about that.
All right. We have collections that have been donated to us over those intervening years, over 10,000 books, magazines from all over the world, articles, newspaper clippings, the documents, the correspondence from the San Diego and Arizona Railroad, and the Santa Fe Railroad are here.
So it's really a railroad buff's dream come true out here.
Absolutely. You can't believe all the things that are here. Postcards and almost anything to do with railroads, calendars, yeah. It's here in this archive.
And of course, there's also the museum here. There's the gift shop, and you can ride the rails like we just did. I understand you're an old train man yourself. Tell us a little bit about your experiences.
After I joined the museum, we found out here that all volunteers are encouraged to participate in anything they want. In 1985, when I joined and first came out here to Campo, we had just acquired an old gymnasium from World War II vintage that we were rebuilding into a car shop. Since that time, we finished that reservation. I was up on scaffolding, ripping off siding, having a great time.
Wow.
We built a whole display building. We've added all the tracks, the yards out here. Mm-hmm. And now this new library. After we got the Campo facility and we started running trains in 1988, we did the first rail fare. And my girlfriend and I worked as trainmen for the next decade and a half on the railroad, talking history and interfacing with the passengers, having a wonderful
Fantastic.
Time.
Fantastic. And you've got a colorful tale or two to tell us about your own experiences on this railway right here. You told me one on the train. Can you share that with our listeners?
Well, we had several things that happened on the train. One that I talked to several people on the train about was encountering a mountain lion as we came through one of the tunnels. Came out the portal, and there was a mountain lion 4 feet from the car just standing there talking to us.
Wow. Then there was the story about the carbon in the stacks.
Yeah, we went down to Tecate one trip. We had just restored a 1950s vintage military road switcher locomotive, and it was its maiden voyage. Coming back from Tecate, you're coming uphill all the way. So the engine has to work a little harder. And when the engine got working, all the old carbon and glycol that had built up in the exhaust stacks became heated and then was expelled from the stack, falling like little fiery globules along the track behind the train. And every globule that hit started a fire. So
what did you do?
Within a quarter of a mile, we started 12 fires. The railroad board members were in the last private car on the train. We got out the shovels and the rakes. We went out and put out all the fires.
Oh, good for you. My goodness. Wow. This is just living history out there. Now, the rail line itself is over 100 years old, correct? Tell us a little bit about the history of what they called the Impossible Railway at one time.
The Impossible Railroad actually got started in 1906 by John Diedrich Spreckels, son of Klaus Spreckels, the Sugar King.
Yes.
John was the richest man in San Diego, the only man who had anywhere near the ability to pull off something like this. Overall, the railroad's 140 miles long. It runs from San Diego south through Tijuana through 44 miles of Mexico, then crosses back into the United States. Here at Campo would have been that customs point, and then out through the mountains and down into the desert to El Centro, where it junctions with the Southern Pacific Railroad.
So how many tunnels and trestles are there?
Originally, there were 21 tunnels on the railroad. Four of them in Mexico and 17 of them in the Carrizo Gorge, that 11-mile stretch that transitions from the mountains down into the desert. Bridges, almost all of the bridges also are in the Carrizo Gorge. Most of them are small. It's just an extremely rugged and difficult area to operate a railroad. Two of the bridges cross the Tijuana River at two different points, and two of the bridges out here cross Highway 94.
When they were building this railway, they called it the Impossible Railway. What were some of the things that happened that delayed the construction?
The so-called Mexican Revolution of 1911. Actually, a group of foreigners and Americans tried to take over Baja California and start their own socialist state. That ultimately failed, but while it was going on, they attacked the trains, cut the telegraph wires, stole food, scared off the work people. Mm-hmm. World War I halted all railroad construction in the United States. John Spreckels personally went back to Washington and convinced Congress to grant him an exemption so they could continue. Southern Pacific was financing half the railroad under Edward Henry Harriman. When Harriman died, the new management tried to renege on the deal. Took years of court fights for Spreckels to get them to come in. In the meantime, he sold off assets and spent $7 million of his own money, keeping the minimum of construction going until he won the lawsuit, and eventually Southern Pacific stepped back in.
They had a few natural disasters along the way, too.
They had floods, the 1916 Rainmaker flood in particular.
The Rainmaker, yeah.
Destroyed about 25% of the railroad as then constructed. And almost 50% of the feeder lines in San Diego, the little local railroads, the National City, Otay, the Cuyamaca, were decimated by the flood. Other floods, after the railroad was built, even the 1920s, there was a tunnel fire that collapsed a tunnel. Just landslides, everything you can imagine got in the way.
There you go. Well, folks, you can come down and you can listen. If you come out here, you have an opportunity to ride those rails, talk to the folks who are all very knowledgeable about train history, and experience a little bit of living history from San Diego's colorful past right here in East County.
We'd love to see you.
Well, thanks so much for joining us on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
This is Ed Barena with a Crime Beat Report. David Chambliss is a convicted child molester and sexually violent predator with a mental disorder who has been living in Hacumba for the past 5 years after being released from a state mental hospital. Now Judge David Gill has ruled that he can be released from state supervision without any conditions after completing his parole period, which had included GPS monitoring, polygraph, and drug testing. San Diego Superior Court Judge David Gill granted the request on Tuesday after reviewing evaluations by three mental health experts who determined that Chambliss no longer meets the predator criteria. It is unknown where Gill will live, though his family has a home in Descanso. He will continue to be registered as a sex offender for the rest of his life through the Megan's Law Directory, so residents can determine if he is in their community, but he will no longer be monitored. Both State Senator Joel Anderson and Supervisor Diane Jacob had submitted letters opposing his unconditional release. Chambliss was convicted in 1989 of 5 counts of committing a lewd act on a child. The victims were 2 girls, ages 7 and 9. He was diagnosed as a pedophile at the time, though 2 other experts consulted by the district attorney later concluded that Chambliss no longer fits the criteria to be considered a predator. He is one of several sexually violent predators who have been released into East County in recent years, and the second to be released unconditionally from supervision by authorities.
There are many questions surrounding why thousands of Central Americans are setting off alone and risking their lives to migrate to the United States. One woman who has made that journey wants to shine a light on the issue. Kenya Calderon was just 11 years old when her family fled El Salvador 9 years ago, after she says their neighborhood was overrun by gangs, crime, and a general feeling of despair.
The violence was horrible. You know, you just didn't feel safe. And gang members would kidnap girls and force them into the gangs and make them be sex slaves.
Calderon says the economic and political situations in many Central American countries and Mexico have deteriorated because their economies have failed to produce jobs, which in turn fuels hopelessness and violence. In El Salvador, police report so far this year, murders of children 17 and under are up 77% from a year ago, while a city in northwestern Honduras has the world's highest homicide rate, according to the United Nations. Calderon rejects the notion that children are being sent to the U.S. by their parents because they think some sort of window of lax border enforcement has opened up. She says children subjected to rampant daily violence and horrific conditions are forced to grow up very quickly.
They're the ones making a decision, and sometimes they just tell their family, I'm coming, be ready for me, because they cannot wait for anything, for any change. They know that nothing's going to change that's going to better their life.
Calderon says the record high number of deportations under the Obama administration is well known in Central America, but many desperate youth still feel migration is their best hope. She says children have actually been fleeing those countries for several years, a fact well documented by groups such as the Pew Hispanic Trust.
A lot of Americans feel like the situation is being exaggerated. And I feel it's because we lack a sense of curiosity. I think we need to be aware a lot more of what's going around the world, not just in the countries that benefit us.
Calderon hopes more Americans will take the time to research what is happening and why, and instead of using the situation for political gain, to look for ways to help families reunite, to treat immigrants with respect, and to take a long look at U.S. policies in the region.
I feel like we all should be looking for another solution that will help these kids, because this is a cry for help. Something must be done, not because they want to win the next election, but because we are humans.
This story was made possible in part by the Vocal Fund. For Public News Service, I'm Mona Shand.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Descanso area residents take to the streets for Descanso Days every July. This year was the 45th year for the town's annual parade and street fair, and it was a great success. The Descanso Town Hall Association uses the proceeds to maintain the over 100-year-old town hall. Following the morning parade, organizations and businesses set up booths, vendors provided food and drinks, and the Steve Hill Band performed country music all afternoon. Longtime Descanso resident Bob Merrigan says it really brings the community together.
It's a local parade, so that's what's cool, is the people here are here to watch their kids and their activities, people from their activities go through this parade. So it's a local parade and we always enjoy it.
This year, was the turnout for the parade good?
I think it was very good this year. Some years when it's really hot, people back off, but this year wasn't very hot and it seemed like there was quite a few there. Yeah, good turnout.
Now, how about the rest of the turnout following the parade? How has that been?
Well, as usual, we have a big crowd up here at the town hall to eat, and then when everybody gets fed and go through the booths, they kind of filter out, and the ones that are left over are the ones that are going to stay here until the end of it.
You're a Descanso resident. Tell me about this community.
Things have changed considerably. A lot more upper income and people that want to get out of the city and out of the crime areas and things like this. Come out in the country. We get to see a little bit of the seasons here. It's a wonderful place to live. Your neighbors are always your friends. Everybody gets to see everybody. Events, community events. It's just a cool place to live. Really cool.
Merrigan says pretty much everybody he knows in Descanso shows up every year for Descanso Days. Jim Brewster, KNSJ News, reporting for East County Magazine.
BMW has announced a recall of 1.6 million vehicles to repair airbags. The recall includes 3-series cars from model years 2000 to 2006. That includes over 500,000 vehicles in the U.S. The airbag issue has also affected other automakers, and the BMW recall is a precaution. The airbag inflators and systems manufactured by Takata Corporation can rupture, causing airbags to fail and shards to fly out, possibly causing injury. BMW plans to replace all passenger side front airbags. This is a new recall after an early recall in May of other models for the same concerns. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. Palm oil is in many of the foods that you eat, from peanut butter to candy bars. It's also in cosmetics, soaps, and other personal care products. But as demand for cheap palm oil among major manufacturers grows, rainforests are being decimated in Southeast Asia and now Africa. This deforestation is endangering orangutans, chimpanzees, and other great apes by destroying their habitat. The World Wildlife Fund estimates that about half of all products found in major supermarkets contain palm oil. It's even in Girl Scout cookies. Palm oil can be grown sustainably on plantations without ravaging rainforests, or other ingredients can be substituted. Now, thanks to consumer pressure, some major companies are changing their ways. Starbucks, Kellogg, and Dunkin' Donuts have committed to using sustainable palm oil that is not from rainforests. So the next time you are shopping, check the label. Avoiding products with palm oil that's not sustainably farmed and letting companies know that you care about this issue could save great apes from extinction.
When thunder roars, head indoors. That's the advice from East County Magazine's columnist, our own in-house fire chief, Sam DiGiovanna. It's that time of the year when large cumulus clouds are forming over Southern California, including our mountain areas in East County. This monsoonal pattern is produced by an area of high pressure over the Four Corners region. The clockwise flow draws moisture into Southern California. These clouds can produce lightning, thunder, hail, and heavy rain.
Pay attention to weather forecasts, and when thunder roars, head indoors as a safety precaution. There is no place that's safe outdoors when thunderstorms are in the area. If you hear thunder, that means that lightning is close enough to strike you. A lightning bolt can actually travel for several miles, even with blue skies. And in fact, this actually happened to a friend of our family who walked out in his front yard in Santee a few years back and was struck by lightning that traveled several miles when the skies were blue and it wasn't even raining. Also, stay indoors and away from windows and doors and off of porches. If the forecast calls for possible thunderstorms, you may need to change some of those outdoor plans, such as hiking, golfing, or swimming. If you are caught outside, immediately get off elevated areas such as hills, ridges, or peaks, and never shelter under an isolated tree, since lightning tends to be attracted to the highest object around. Get inside or remain in your car for at least 30 minutes after the storm passes.
Also, stay out of areas that are subject to flooding. This includes low-lying areas, canyons, creeks, and washes. Avoid places that have already flooded, and do not try to cross a flowing stream either by foot or car. 80% of flood deaths occur in vehicles, and most happen when drivers make a single fatal mistake trying to navigate through floodwaters.
That's right. You don't want to wind up like a couple of drivers that we've had video submitted to us of, such as one whose car was floating down the San Diego River a couple of years ago.
During storms, make sure you bring your pets inside.
For additional information on weather and flash flood safety, Chief DiGiovanna recommends visiting www.flashfloodsafety.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
And Leon Thompson. The California State Water Resources Control Board has announced that it will impose unprecedented restrictions statewide on outdoor watering, including steep fines of up to $500 a day for those who ignore the rules. This marks the first time ever that water rationing has been imposed statewide, though locally San Diegans have seen rationing in prior droughts. Farmers on agriculturally zoned lands are exempted, however. For water districts that have not implemented mandatory water savings rules, some residents could be limited to watering the yards just 2 days a week. Fortunately, in San Diego County, many local districts have already adopted such restrictions, so residents in certain local districts may be able to water more often. The new rules also prohibit washing off sidewalks and driveways, require shutoff nozzles when washing cars, and if you have a fountain, it must use recirculated water starting August 1st. The rules grant significant leeway to local districts, which could issue warnings or lower-level fines for first-time violators. A spokesman for Helix Water District has said that he doesn't expect much disruption for the district's customers, since the district has already issued voluntary water-saving guidelines, and customers have complied without being forced to do so through mandatory limits. The water restrictions were imposed after a new report showed that statewide water use actually rose 1%, despite the governor calling on all Californians to cut water use by 20% due to the long-lasting drought. Water use in San Diego County has increased about 10% since January during very dry conditions. However, area residents have already conserved significantly before the latest hot spell. The push to save water is impacting some state campgrounds which have closed or restricted shower use. After the new regulations were announced, Governor Jerry Brown stated on Twitter that the Water Board's emergency action and UC Davis's water report are a reminder to Californians that there's more work to do. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. Due to high fire danger, Cleveland National Forest has announced elevated fire restrictions starting Friday, July 18th. The change is due to drier fuel conditions, higher temperatures, and the likelihood of small fires becoming big fires. To reduce fire danger, the elevated fire restrictions prohibit wood or charcoal fires except in designated areas. Also, smoking is prohibited except inside vehicles, buildings, or within a developed recreation site. The restrictions also require spark arresters on off-highway vehicles, chainsaws, and other internal combustion equipment. The fire restriction levels are posted on the Cleveland National Forest website, or you can get campfire information at smokybear.com. Before you visit the forest, you can contact your closest Forest Service office to find out the current information on fire danger and the level of fire restrictions. District offices are open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. You can also call the Descanso Ranger District for Alpine, Descanso, and Laguna Mountain areas at 619-445-6235, or for Palomar Mountain, Ramona, and other areas in northeast San Diego County, call 760-788-0250. For East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week.
This is Rebecca Williamson, guest hosting Destination East County. This week's Destination East County has some wild events across our region, from the Bulls Only Rodeo in Lakeside to a Yappy Hour in El Cajon. Ice skating starts at Hot Croc Nights, plus we've got news of a blues concert, a wine dinner, and a twilight walk this week in East County. We also have sneak previews of some of the hot events coming up next week, including Pine Valley Days and much, much more. So stay tuned. Bull riding, mutton busting, and wild horse racing are among the attractions slated for this weekend's Bulls Only Rodeo at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds. This event is produced by the Optimist Club of Lakeside to benefit charitable causes supported by the Optimist. Shows start at 7:30 p.m. For tickets, call 619-443-2447. For more information, visit www.bullsonlyrodeo.com. Santique Summer Concerts lineup for their Blues and Barbecue Night on Thursday, July 17th includes the Mercedes Moore Band and the Bayou Brothers with special guest Bill McGee. The festivities begin at 5:30 p.m. and there will be blues, barbecue, and a beer garden until 8:30 p.m. for this event held at Santee's Town Center Community Park East. Camp Bow Wow hosts its fourth annual Yappy Hour season at the Downtown Cafe in El Cajon, where guests are invited to bring your dog and enjoy free appetizers donated by the restaurant. Yappy Hours will be held on July 17th, August 21st, September 18th, plus on October 30th, a Halloween costume contest will be added. Opportunity drawings will be offered at all Yappy Hours, with proceeds benefiting the Bow Wow Buddies Foundation, which focuses on finding foster and lifetime homes for unwanted animals, promoting humane education and treatment, and investing in research to cure diseases. Les Miserables will be staged atop Mount Helix July 17th through August 2nd. Christian Community Theater is returning to Mount Helix after being far away for 7 years. Theatergoers will see Les Mis with stunning views of San Diego as the surrounding backdrop. Les Miserables is the world's longest-running musical set in a nation amid the grip of revolution. For information and tickets, visit ChristianCommunityTheater.com. Bistro 60 Restaurant, located on El Cajon Boulevard near San Diego State, is hosting a wine dinner on July 18th, a decadent six-course dinner paired with Hill Family Estate wines. Reservations are required. The menu includes a cantaloupe soup shooter, grilled scallops with saffron cream cheese, herbed lamb roulade with Merlot juice, braised chicken thighs and pomegranate molasses, roasted quail, and ginger pudding with fresh berries. For information and reservations, you can visit bistro60sd.com. You're invited to join Mission Trails Regional Park Guides this summer for free Saturday evening guided walks in the park all summer long to learn about the changes that occur as the sun goes down. These walks last approximately an hour and a half and start from the parking lot across from the Kumeyaay Campground. The next one is set for Saturday, July 19th at 7:15 p.m. at mtrp.org. Hot Croc Nights begin this week. Starting July 23rd, the Salvation Army Croc Center will be offering family ice skating sessions each Wednesday evening at 7:15 p.m. from now through the end of August. You can beat the heat with special discount rates of just $5 per person. The Croc Center is located at 6845 University Avenue, just one block west of La Mesa. For more information, visit the Croc Center website at croccenter.org. Departing from the depot at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo on Saturdays and Sundays, throughout most of the summer, the Golden State Limited Vintage Train transports museum guests back in time over to antique locomotives and passenger cars, traveling the historic San Diego and Arizona Railway. Built by John D. Spreckles, the Sugar Baron, the rail line takes passengers on a trip through our rugged backcountry scenery as the train travels toward the Mexican border, crosses the Campo Creek Viaduct, and ending at the International Tunnel. The train then returns to Campo, where you can visit the museum's collection of steam and diesel locomotives, passenger and freight railroad cars, and other displays. For reservations, visit the San Diego Railway Museum website at sdrm.org. Now for a preview of coming attractions. At Oak Oasis Preserve Campground in Lakeside, a free family campout and star party will be held Friday and Saturday, July 25th and 26th. You're invited to join members of the San Diego Astronomy Association and park staff using telescopes to view stars and planets from 8 to 10 p.m. If you plan to camp over, arrive by 7 p.m. to set up before sunset. Camping gear, warm clothes, and a flashlight are recommended. You can RSVP by calling 619-561-0590. The mountain town of Pine Valley hosts its annual Pine Valley Days festivities on July.
The host, Scott. I couldn't hear it.
Okay. The mountain town of Pine Valley hosts its annual Pine Valley Days festivities on July 26th. The fanfare begins on Friday night with a deep pit barbecue from 5 to 8 p.m. Then, on Saturday at 7 a.m., the best parade in East County, or so the organizers claim, rolls out at 9 a.m., followed by activities for families and kids from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., including the free Music in the Mountains Festival at the Pine Valley Park, Horseshoe Tournament, Country Marketplace, Arts and Crafts Vendors, Food, and from 11 to 2 p.m., a chili cook-off. For more information on all these events, visit pinevalleydays.com. Trezette's Catering will serve up an array of fruit, herb, and cheese selections paired with artisan wines on Saturday, July 26th from 3 to 6 p.m. at the Ramona Ranch Winery. The menu includes nectarines with tarragon feta cheese paired with a Ramona Ranch orange muscat. Plums with a lavender goat cheese paired with Ramona Ranch Sauvignon Rosé. Strawberries with basil blue cheese paired with a Ramona Ranch Syrah. There is a cost for this event with discounts for the wine club members. For more information, you can visit RamonaRanch.com. That's all for this week. You can find the details on all of these events and more on our calendar in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org. If you have an event you'd like to have on our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County show on KNSJ, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week.
This is Rebecca Williamson, guest hosting Destination East County. This week's Destination East County has some wild events across our region, from the Bulls Only Rodeo in Lakeside to a Yappy Hour in El Cajon. Ice skating starts at Hot Crock Nights, plus we've got news of a blues concert, a wine dinner, and a twilight walk this week in East County. We also have sneak previews of some of the hot events coming up next week, including Pine Valley Days and much, much more, so stay tuned. Bull riding, mutton busting, and wild horse racing are among the attractions slated for this weekend's Bulls Only Rodeo at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds. This event is produced by the Optimist Club of Lakeside to benefit charitable causes supported by the Optimist. Shows start at 7:30 p.m. For tickets, call 619-443-2447. For more information, visit www.bullsonlyrodeo.com. Santique Summer Concerts lineup for their Blues and Barbecue Night on Thursday, July 17th includes the Mercedes Moore Band and the Bayou Brothers with special guest Bill McGee. The festivities begin at 5:30 p.m. and there will be blues, barbecue, and a beer garden until 8:30 p.m. for this event held at Santee's Town Center Community Park East. Camp Bow Wow hosts its fourth annual Yappy Hour season at the Downtown Cafe in El Cajon, where guests are invited to bring your dog and enjoy free appetizers donated by the restaurant. Yappy Hours will be held on July 17th, August 21st, September 18th, plus on October 30th, a Halloween costume contest will be added. Opportunity drawings will be offered at all Yappy Hours, with proceeds benefiting the Bow Wow Buddies Foundation, which focuses on finding foster and lifetime homes for unwanted animals, promoting humane education and treatment, and investing in research to cure diseases. Les Miserables will be staged atop Mount Helix July 17th through August 2nd. Christian Community Theater is returning to Mount Helix after being far away for 7 years. Theatergoers will see Les Mis with stunning views of San Diego as the surrounding backdrop. Les Miserables is the world's longest-running musical set in a nation amid the grip of revolution. For information and tickets, visit ChristianCommunityTheater.com. Bistro 60 Restaurant, located on El Cajon Boulevard near San Diego State, is hosting a wine dinner on July 18th. A decadent six-course dinner paired with Hill Family Estate wines. Reservations are required. The menu includes a cantaloupe soup shooter, grilled scallops with saffron cream cheese, herbed lamb roulade with Merlot juice, braised chicken thighs and pomegranate molasses, roasted quail, and ginger pudding with fresh berries. For information and reservations, you can visit bistro60sd.com. You're invited to join Mission Trails Regional Park Guides this summer for free Saturday evening guided walks in the park all summer long to learn about the changes that occur as the sun goes down. These walks last approximately an hour and a half and start from the parking lot across from the Kumeyaay Campground. The next one is set for Saturday, July 19th at 7:15 p.m. at mtrp.org. Hot Croc Nights begin this week. Starting July 23rd, the Salvation Army Croc Center will be offering family ice skating sessions each Wednesday evening at 7:15 p.m. from now through the end of August. You can beat the heat with special discount rates. The Croc Center is located at 6845 University Avenue, just one block west of La Mesa. For more information, visit the Croc Center website at croccenter.org. Departing from the depot at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo on Saturdays and Sundays, throughout most of the summer, the Golden State Limited Vintage Train transports museum guests back in time over to antique locomotives and passenger cars, traveling the historic San Diego and Arizona Railway. Built by John D. Spreckles, the Sugar Baron, the rail line takes passengers on a trip through our rugged backcountry scenery as the train travels toward the Mexican border, crosses the Campo Creek Viaduct, and ending at the International Tunnel. The train then returns to Campo, where you can visit the museum's collection of steam and diesel locomotives, passenger and freight railroad cars, and other displays. For reservations, visit the San Diego Railway Museum website at sdrm.org. Now for a preview of coming attractions. At Oak Oasis Preserve Campground in Lakeside, a free family campout and star party will be held Friday and Saturday, July 25th and 26th. You're invited to join members of the San Diego Astronomy Association and park staff using telescopes to view stars and planets from 8 to 10 p.m. If you plan to camp over, arrive by 7 p.m. to set up before sunset. Camping gear, warm clothes, and a flashlight are recommended. You can RSVP by calling 619-561-0590. The mountain town of Pine Valley hosts its annual Pine Valley Days festivities on July 26th. The fanfare begins on Friday night with a deep pit barbecue from 5 to 8 p.m. Then, on Saturday at 7 a.m., the best parade in East County, or so the organizers claim, rolls out at 9 a.m., followed by activities for families and kids from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., including the free Music in the Mountains Festival at the Pine Valley Park, Horseshoe Tournament, Country Marketplace, Arts and Crafts Vendors, Food, and Chili Cook-Off. For more information on all these events, visit pinevalleydays.com. Trezette's Catering will serve up an array of fruit, herb, and cheese selections paired with artisan wines on Saturday, July 26th from 3 to 6 p.m. at the Ramona Ranch Winery. The menu includes nectarines with tarragon feta cheese paired with a Ramona Ranch orange muscat, plums with a lavender goat cheese paired with Ramona Ranch Sauvignon Rosé, strawberries with basil blue cheese paired with a Ramona Ranch Syrah. There is a cost for this event with discounts for the wine club members. For more information, you can visit RamonaRanch.com. That's all for this week. You can find the details on all of these events and more on our calendar in our Festivals and Events section online at eastcountymagazine.org. If you have an event you'd like to have on our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County Show on KNSJ, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Welcome to Vines and Wines with your host, Greg Manis of the Manis Vineyards Estate.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, guest hosting the Vines and Wines segment. And today we are on the road in Ramona. We are here at the Hatfield Creek Vineyards with Elaine Littleton, the owner of one of Ramona's newest wineries. Elaine, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, you just opened your winery about a month ago, I understand.
On lucky Friday, the 13th of June, we opened our tasting room after 8 years of planting and building.
Well, congratulations. It's a lovely tasting room. How large is this facility?
I think we're 2,300 square feet total, but that includes the cellar that's downstairs where we're winemaking.
Beautiful. Now, we have some very exciting news out of Sacramento. We just learned that Governor Jerry Brown has signed some legislation that takes effect immediately. This was passed as emergency legislation to allow wineries to do wine tasting at farmers markets. Elaine, you're also a member of the Ramona Valley Vineyards Association and the Farm Bureau for San Diego County. So can you tell us how important is this for our local winemakers and grape growers in the region?
Well, I think for Ramona, because there's so many people down the hill, as we refer to it, that don't know that Ramona has wineries or that it's an American viticultural area, I think it would be a wonderful opportunity by going to the farmers markets that are down the hill, especially weekday ones, because then it would leave the weekends available for people to be up here tasting.
Yeah, come up and discover all the wineries. How many wineries are there in the Ramona region alone now, wineries and vineyards?
I think we're pressing 100 vineyards, and I'm not sure how many wineries, but tasting rooms, we have 25 tasting rooms open. There are some wineries that are bonded, but they aren't ready yet to open tasting rooms.
Yeah, this has really exploded. When we first started the magazine back in 2008, I can recall going out to the brand new sort of tasting rooms, and it would be somebody in their garage doing serving up samples of some good wines. But it's really come along now with the boutique winery ordinance passing, and we're seeing this explosion of sort of bigger and bigger and fancier tasting rooms opening up. Still homey and rustic, but a lot more space, a lot more room. You have picnic facilities too, I understand.
Well, we're all different out here. I mean, there's some of us that have got indoor tasting rooms like we have with picnic areas, and there's some that just have tasting patios and overlooking farmyards. Mm-hmm. So it runs the gambit of the whole thing. We all are pretty conscientious about wanting to stay small and intimate and not to get too big and too commercial.
Right, we're not going to be Napa in terms of the
or
the
even Temecula, actually.
Yeah, it makes it a fun experience, personal experience. You come up, you meet the winemaker and
talk exactly,
with them.
And that's the most important part. Our guests that come up from down the hill just love meeting the winemaker, meeting the owners, hearing the stories about how they got into this whole crazy industry.
And now they'll be able to do that directly at the farmer's market in some cases. Now, I understand there's still a few rules to be worked out. What are some of the issues that need to be resolved here in San Diego County before the tasting begins at the markets?
Well, you still have to become, according to Eric Larson, the executive director of the Farm Bureau, who I talked to about this, We still have to be certified through the farmers markets in the county. There's a department at the county, apparently, that certifies the people who go to the farmers markets.
So can you only bring your own wine, for example?
Yes.
Or can you bring other wineries, or can association bring wine?
We don't know, and the county doesn't know. I sent them an email yesterday, the gal who's in charge, and I had about half a dozen questions similar to the ones you just asked. Mm-hmm. And she said that they'd get back to me, which is normal because the governor just signed the legislation, 48 hours ago or something?
Right. We're recording this on Friday.
So they need to figure out what to do with that now, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I understand there's also some limits statewide that are being set on the number of tastes, the number of pours, you know, and also making sure that it'll be a separate area. It'll be roped off for the tasting so that the miners won't have access.
Roped off area. All the usual ABC requirements of, you know, checking age requirements of the people that are there.
Sure.
And I believe it's 3 ounces per person is the maximum at any farmer's market.
farmers markets aren't the only thing that's in the pipeline here for bringing people up to Ramona. I understand that you just had a farm tour that the Farm Bureau sponsored for the first time ever. It was held in Ramona. How did that go?
Well, the farm tour day that the Farm Bureau puts on has been going on for several years, and they do it in three different communities, one day a year, three different farming communities, and Ramona had never been on the tour before. So since I'm a new Farm Bureau board member representing Ramona, I asked how come we couldn't have one up here, and they said, well, you can, let's do that. So it was a huge success. And we had a sellout crowd up here, just a huge response from the community.
So I understand it was hundreds of people came on the tour up here.
I think
this
time they sold out 225 tickets up here. We had 196 people right here. So because we had the picnic area for the tour. That we had a lot of people come here and stay for a while. Mm-hmm. Oh, and we were, of course, pouring some wine for them.
Of course. The Ramona region, for listeners that may not know, actually has a federal appellation or designation as a wine-growing region now. And some of the wineries have been winning an awful lot of awards. We're over at your tasting room counter now, and Elaine, I'm seeing an awful lot of medals hanging around these bottles here.
Don't you just love the sound of bling? The only other sound that's better is a popping cork.
There you go. Tell us about some of the contests that your winery has entered. Hatfield Creek Winery has entered and won.
We entered the New York Finger Lakes International Competition, which is in the industry is a pretty prestigious one, and they get applications from all over the world. And so we're going up against some pretty stiff competition, and we won two silvers and a bronze. Yeah, we grow red wines here. We've got 1,000 Zinfandel vines and 1,000 Petit Syrah vines. So we make a field blend, which is a blend of those two, and then we make the Petit Syrah and the Zinfandel separately, too.
Very good. Well, congratulations. How did you settle in on Zinfandel and Petit Syrah as the two grape varietals that you're specializing in here?
I had lunch one day with Francis Ford Coppola's winemaker, and he was asking us about our project and how many acres we had, and he suggested the Petit Syrah to go with the Zinfandel that I thought was my favorite and knew I wanted to plant. When I asked him why Petit Syrah, he said because they're typically blended together. The Petit Syrah adds a little body and color to Zin, which might come in a little pale.
So you thought Zinfandel was your favorite? So
I did. I didn't know anything much about Petit Syrah at all until I went to BevMo and I bought some Petit Syrah and tasted it. And then I realized that I think I really liked the Petit Syrah better, and it was probably the Petit Syrah that had been blended into Zinfandel that I had been picking up on and really liked it best. That's why. And then we make this field blend that's a perfect marriage of both those varieties right out of the field. They're fermented together and pressed together. And
okay, Syrah, Syrah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, wait, now don't break the glass.
I'm sorry.
When did you first plant your vines? From the time they go into the ground to the time you start winning these awards, how long does that take?
We planted some in 2007, some in 2008, and some in 2009. And then we started harvesting the 2007s in 2009, just a very small quantity. Mm-hmm. And we were selling our grapes to the other winemakers in the valley who were a little ahead of us in the wine department. Mm-hmm. So we sold our grapes to them until we had a facility built to make our own wines.
Very good. Well, congratulations again on everything you've accomplished, Elaine. And if people wish to get more information, first of all, about the Hatfield Creek Vineyards, where would they find that?
We're hatfieldcreekvineyards.com on the Internet.
Okay.
And the Ramona Valley Wine Region magazine puts out a map that's got an all-inclusive listing of all of the wineries who have tasting rooms or all who want to be listed in our map. And there's about 24, 25 on there. And we're on there.
Very good. We'll have information also up on our site in the food and wine section at eastcountymagazine.org. Do you have any other events that are coming up in the Ramona Valley wine region that listeners may want to know about?
Absolutely. We're doing our second annual Ramona Art and Wine Festival on the first Saturday in November, which is November the 1st. Mm-hmm. It's held at, San Diego County has two castles, and Ramona has one of them at the Mount Woodson Castle.
Oh, it's a spectacular venue. Fabulous. I went to that last
venue.
Year.
Fabulous venue. It's very marvelous. Upscale. No cowboy boots. Sorry.
this was built by Amy Strong, who was,
She was a dress designer and costume designer for stars in Hollywood, and they would come down, and this was her dream home. Hand-built, hand-hewn, 27-room castle. It's quite a wonderful event. We've got 12 of our local wineries that'll mm-hmm. be pouring, half a dozen chefs from the area offering small bites, and about 20 artists who will be displaying. Oh, and we have a painted wine barrel auction. We've got 6 wine barrels we'll be auctioning off.
Wonderful. Where can people get more information about that event if they wish to attend or get more information?
The website for the festival is the RamonaArtAndWineFest.net, or since it's a benefit for the Ramona Heart Mural Project, you can find information too through RamonaMurals.com.
Ah, wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Elaine, for joining us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Cheers.
Cheers.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road.
We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment.
If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.